Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebelt. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing really good. Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, I've been looking at some of your stuff, and you supposedly teach people how to be the perfect podcast guest.
So, correct.
Yeah, so I was wondering, like, what's it going to be like to have a perfect guest on my show? I don't think I've ever had one. And then, I started thinking, oh, what does that really mean? Like, perfect for who?
Well, exactly. It's, you know, and I'll give the disclaimer. You know what the joke is: those that can do, those that can't teach. So maybe I teach how to be the perfect guest as opposed to being the perfect guest, but perfect both from the standpoint of people trying to get results from it, you know, trying to turn listeners into leads, trying to get invited onto shows, and really how to use podcasting to grow your business without being a podcast host. Because anybody that says doing a podcast is easy either has never done it or has never done it well. I give you a whole lot of credit for the work that goes into this.
Thank you. And it's not easy, and it does take time. I was actually talking with a buddy of mine today, and I was like, I cannot do any more audio content because you wanted me to do something else because I'm ramping up the podcast. And there's only so much good content that you can produce. You know what I mean.
Like yes.
You know, you can't just overwhelm yourself because the quality is going to go down. And like, even with you, I had to do some research. I had to think of what are we going to talk about. It's not as simple as just getting on. I mean, it is simple once we kind of know what we're talking about and I kind of know who you are based on what I've seen, but it's not that simple. And then there's still editing and marketing, and it's a whole bunch of work. I think in some ways I should just be a guest. Maybe that's what I should be doing right now.
I'm the lazy one. I look at it and, you know, I look at podcasts like swimming pools, and I could build my own, but why would I if everybody will invite me to theirs? And, you know, they've got much bigger shows than I would starting out. So to me, it's the easy way to get results.
Yeah, it is and it's not. Like, I'll give you an example. When I was first starting out, I actually went on someone else's podcast. And at that time, I was mostly selling SEO services. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about SEO, and I'm like, well, maybe I'll get some clients from this. But everyone that called me afterwards and emailed me, they didn't ask about my marketing services. They wanted to know how to start an SEO company, which was the completely wrong type of lead. I'm like, I'm not sure what I've said, but no, that's not what I'm trying to do here. So when someone goes on a podcast, how do you teach them to, I guess, present what they're doing in a way where they get the right type of client?
Sure. And that's really comes down to it. We go through a 6-step process. And the first step is identifying who your ideal buyer persona is, who's your ideal customer, and making sure that you go on podcasts that have those people and talking to them continually. And talking about examples that move them towards, you know, being a visitor to your site. So step one is identifying who your ideal customer is. Step two is identifying your expertise. And a lot of people have problems with that, you know, calling themselves an expert. Step three is pitching yourself to the host in a professional way so they see you as an expert. Four is while you're on the podcast. And while you're on the podcast, your job there is to make the host look like a genius for inviting you. It's not to pitch. It's to tell stories. It's to educate people. And one of the great things about podcasts is, and I say this on my podcast, I'll tell you behind the curtain here what I'm doing. You know, if I talk about an infographic or a case study on my website, those are all baits to get you to go from being a listener to a visitor. We've got one customer, and she makes quilts, you know, out of T-shirts. And she made one for Wayne Gretzky with all his different jerseys. And as she talks about that on a podcast, there's no way you want to, can see that. But if you want to see it, she'll go, oh, just come back to the website. It's right there. Everybody comes back to see Wayne Gretzky's one. And she'll use that example if she's, you know, on a sports one, if she's one on that's, you know, with moms on baby clothes, where they sew them all together to make a quilt. She'll use another example, but really anything to get them back there. And then once you bring them back to your site, that's step, you know, five. How do you take them from being listeners to being visitors? And with that, you need to talk about, you know, where they can go to get more information. And just don't send them to your Twitter, or worse yet, even send them to your homepage of your site. Because if they listen to it day one when it posts, they might see the right stuff. But if they listen to it 2 years from now, they're going to be so confused. So always put out a vanity site form. So for this one, we'll talk about, you know, if you want to see any of the stuff that Tom and I talked about, just come to tmschwab.com/smartbrand and everything will be there. And when you get there, you know, there'll be a picture of you because they know you, they like you, they trust you more. There'll be some of the things we talked about, and then there'll be some free offers, and then there'll be some opt-ins also. So that's how you move them from being a visitor to being a lead. So the perfect podcast has a lot to do with not only the interview, but how you build the system before and after. Just getting on a podcast is like fuel. You know, it makes a big flash, almost like a firework. But if you don't have anything to capture that, you'll go on a lot of podcasts and never get any business out of it. Or like you said, you'll go on podcasts and you'll get the wrong kinds of leads.
I like what you did there. Listeners, you should rewind about a minute and a half and just seeing how Tom hijacked all the people to go on his website. You probably didn't even realize it. Like, yeah, I should go on there. I'm not sure why, but I should just go on that site. But I want to talk a little bit more about how you started out, because when I looked at the About page, before we jump back into the podcast thing, you, my friend, have one of the most unsexiest businesses I've ever seen that you were working on. And this is – I'm giving you props, because most people do not want to get involved in boring businesses, but those are the ones that you can grow a lot of the times, a lot. But this business was good by crutches. I looked at it and I was like, wow. I love the product. I love the market, but it's just so unsexy. There's just when you just look at it, it's like, this is one of the most boring things I could probably be selling right now.
Well, last year at Inbound 2014, they did a survey, and you had to vote for the most unsexy product to sell online. And we came in number two behind industrial lubricants.
Okay, well, yeah.
And
I'll give them that, yeah. Lubricants, yeah. Okay.
but with that, Tom, you know, it's sexy is out. If you want to, you know, helpful is the new sexy. So if you can find a niche that you can help people in and talk directly to them, that's how you're going to grow it. And the sexiest stuff I have on there is customer stories, because user-generated content, you know, that's the holy grail. Most of that copy on that site, we didn't write. We just took what users had told us. The best blog posts that we have, the best images we have, those are all of user-generated content. And really, we talked before about, you know, buyer persona. If you go to that site, you'll see our four main buyer personas, because they scroll along the top there. You know, you'll see Mary the Motivated Mom come by. You'll see Woody the Working Dad. You'll see Andy the Active Athlete, and you'll see Jerry the on-the-go grandparent. And those are our four main buyer personas there. So the same way, if I'm on a podcast, you know, talking about recovering after foot or ankle surgery, I have to know what the audience is, because there's a different group of people that listen to active podcasts. So if you're on a sports podcast, you know, don't talk about Jerry the on-the-go grandparent. You're talking to a different audience at that point. So all of the inbound principles that we used in Goodbye Crutches is the same thing we're using now on podcasts. You know, content's the fuel that drives our inbound engine, and blogs are really saturated these days, but podcasts are a great medium. And what we found is that a good blog, industry-wide, anybody will tell you a blog will convert 1% to 2% from visitors to leads. Our traffic that we've seen with ourselves and numerous customers, over 500 podcast interviews altogether, it's converting 25 times better than blogs. So if somebody hears you on a podcast, you know, they get to know, like, and trust you. And either they come to your site ready to engage with you, or they don't. And that's fine. You don't want everybody. You just want those people that, you know, your ideal customers.
Right. Before we get into all that, the one thing I've seen on that old company, at one point you were getting most of your traffic from pay-per-click. I think it said about 90%. Walk me a little bit through the process of how you were able to reduce that and get into different types of marketing and bring traffic in. Because I think there are a lot of businesses right now and people listening that have the same problem. If their AdWords campaign or Facebook campaign dies, their business dies. So I'm just a little curious about that process.
Yeah, that was my realization that I wasn't building a business. I was chasing a transaction. Now, pay-per-click, you can get traffic one of two ways. You can buy attention or you can earn attention. And we had our entire business built on buying attention. And we were growing our business, you know, but it was like a drug addiction is what I called it. Every day I would spend some money to get some traffic, and the next day I'd have to get another hit. And if you look at it, pay-per-click is a very efficient system. No matter what you do, your cost of customer acquisition is going to keep increasing. You can get the best consultant out there, and the lower, you know, the rate of increase, but it's a perfect system, so it's going to increase. And we looked at it, and with our product, our lifetime value is very low for Goodbye Crutches. You know, most of our customers don't have a repeat purchase with us. But the best thing we can do is have them tell other people about it. So we can't take a loss on our first transaction or a loss on pay-per-click. So we looked at it and charted it out and said in about 24 months, our cost of customer acquisition will eat up all of our profits. So either our business goes away at that point or we find something in the meantime. And so at that time, it was about 5 years ago, I'd read a book by two smart guys out of MIT, Brian Halligan and Dharmesh Saw, that started HubSpot. And they said the world was changing, that people didn't want to be sold. They wanted to find answers online. And they thought that the people that had the best content out there that helped people would gain the know, like, and trust and gain the business. So we did a test on that. At that point, nobody had really tried that inbound marketing for e-commerce. So we did a beta test for about 90 days, just hacking it together with free tools, you know, putting blogs on WordPress, doing follow-up emails with MailChimp. It wasn't pretty, but it worked. And that's what we saw, is that it really worked. That, you know, people would come looking for answers, they'd find the answers, and at that point you could start to engage them. And so that's how we built the business. And over 3 years, we went from buying 3,000 visitors a month to getting 70,000 unique visitors each month. And while 70,000 doesn't sound like a lot for certain industries, for our niche, that was huge. And it allowed us not to only go from being a regional player to a national leader, but it was amazing the opportunities it opened up, both to partner with people overseas that found us, or even some of the interviews and free press we got. I remember one time, I think it was Time Magazine was doing a story, and the reporter said she kept Googling different things, and we kept showing up on high in the search engine because we had blogs that talked about it. And so after she saw us about four or five times, she just assumed these people must be the experts. So she emailed me to get interviewed for it. And, you know, that's a backlink that I couldn't have bought.
How did you figure out what type of content to write? Because that's a hard thing to do. It's not as simple as someone says, just create good content or create helpful content. I mean, there's so many people creating content and most of it no one reads or cares about.
Right. The best content to start out with is answer the question. So if somebody asks a question, and that could be in Twitter, it could be your email, you can ask all your customer service people, what's the common questions people ask? We'll just write a blog post out of it, you know, a 600 word answer. Because if one person is asking that question, other people are too. And most questions are evergreen. So once you put it up there, you'll get to use it more and more. And customer service can use that also. So if all of a sudden somebody tweets and has a question you listen in for you know, keywords, you can come back and say, hey, this article might help you. Or if they're on the phone with somebody or an online chat and somebody asks a question, they might give them a quick answer and say, hey, you can go here for a more in-depth answer. So it really saved them a lot of time. So really our first year was just answering the question. You know, we probably did it before Gary Vaynerchuk did a whole show on it. If they asked, we answered. And then after, you know, we've gone through a lot of those questions, what we started to do was pull in more on user-generated content. So people's stories, because those really resonate. So we'd get, you know, every business gets thank you emails from people. And they're usually typically, 100, 150 words. We take those together and got a intern, just a journalism intern. And they were able to take that content, make blogs out of it. A lot of times we would go ahead and reach out to the person that gave it and said, hey, can we use your name? Do you have a picture that you could send us along with this? And it was great because if you mention somebody in a blog article or in social media, what you'll find is they amplify it also. You know, there's the old joke of how do you sell newspapers in a small town? Put everybody's name in it. You know, everybody will buy one and their mom will buy three. So that was one of our content strategies.
That's interesting. And I can imagine now podcasts are the new blogs, and that's why you're going in that direction. So how do you go about finding the right podcasts to be on? Because there are so many of them, and you could easily waste your time.
Right. And you've got to put yourself in your customer's standpoint. So you're fishing for a certain type of customer. So you want to know where they are already. So you can go into iTunes and start drilling down into, you know, the different categories and try to figure out where your customers are. One of the things we do with a lot of our clients is we'll have them send out a survey and, you know, to their best customers. And those customers typically respond to surveys. And one of the questions is always, do you listen to podcasts? And because you want more customers just like your best customers. So with that, that's just a great way to target it. And then you find it ones that are similar to that.
What strategies do you use to make sure that you actually connect with the listeners who want on that podcast? Because the one thing I've heard so far is that you tell some kind of a story or an example where the visual is missing, and then you tell them to go see that visual on the website, which is really smart. What else are you using?
Oh, you could do, you know, anything that's really visitor bait or link bait. You know, the common thing is a call to action. Why would they want to go to your site? So, you know, you could have a online calculator. You could have a free guide. Anything that brings them value. And it's got to have content with context. So I just can't say, hey, Tom, if you and all your listeners want to come to my website and sign up for my newsletter, you know, just come here. You know, a newsletter is so generic that nobody wants another newsletter in their mailbox. But if you can tie something directly to what we were talking about. So here, I'll give you an example. We've got an infographic that goes through the six steps and describes them all there. It's not something that you can see on a podcast, but if you go to the website and you can get it there. So just anything that gives them a reason to take action. You know, it's really what's the next step, and know that not everybody will. there's a vast majority of the audience that's like, no, you know, Tom, that's interesting information, but I'm not ready for that right now. I'm not ready to be a podcast guest. I don't think this is a way that I want to grow my business. But for those people that are, you've got to give them something to go there.
Yeah, I've been actually telling a lot of my customers the same thing. We've been using a lot of SEO combined with podcast guesting and Kindle books to all bring leads for the clients. But like you said, it's got to be the right client. Some are just not ready for it. So on your website, walk me through your sales funnel. So once you do get the people in, how do you turn those into the leads? And then how do you convert them into customers? Like, what are the steps that you're using on your site to do that?
Sure. And I look at it as a buyer's funnel as opposed to a sales funnel. It's a slight difference, but I'm not trying to push people through my sales funnel. I'm trying to pull them through to solve their problem. And if they don't have a problem or I can't solve it, I don't want them in my funnel. So with that, I've done a lot of tests, and that's why on the page, not everything is behind a form. There's some things that you can get for free and, you know, just click and you get them right there. There are other things that that are behind a form. And I always put a sign up on the page. So, you know, if you go to, you know, tmschwab.com/smartbrand, there'll be all the stuff we talk about. But at the bottom, you know, if you want more information here, sign up, because I want high quality leads, people that want to take the next step, just not numbers, because I want leads that convert. So one of the things we're testing right now, and especially in podcasts, is that podcasts are a sort of an intimate medium, right? You hear my voice, you hear me talking for a half hour. Well, what's the next step after that? Up to this point, we've always gone, and once you downloaded something, we go ahead and send some other emails to you that would be helpful. Hey, here's another case study. Here's a video interview we did. Things that would move people along in their buying and their decision process, and keep the discussion going that way. And one of the things we're testing now, Tom, is if the next step from a podcast should be even more interactive. And so we're doing some tests with webinars. So if somebody likes what they're hearing here, they want to learn more about how to use this strategy, I'll give a full 30-minute training, show everywhere how it does. And you could take that 30-minute training and do it on yourself. Or we've got a product that'll teach you how to do it and get faster results. So at that point, you know, it's sort of that Gary Vaynerchuk, you know, jab, 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 right hook. Well, I do it of serve, 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 ask. And at a certain point, you know, you've built up that trust, so that people see that, you know, you're there for their own good, that you can help them, and that's not just, you know, a scam. Then they'll go ahead and take that next step. And, you know, so they've tried it sort of with a webinar, and now they buy the product. So that's what we're doing right now for our buyer's funnel or sales funnel.
So is the webinar live, or is it something that you pre-record?
We do both. We've got some that are pre-recorded, and we're testing that also to see if a pre-recorded webinar is as effective as a live webinar. To me, I like the live webinars just because there's interaction there. Another thing that we're just starting also is testing it on Blab. In fact, we're recording this on September 15th, and I think that's our first Blab today is this afternoon. And we're going to go on and talk about how we, you know, turn listeners into leads, how we grow our business as podcast guests, do some training with that, but then also allow people to interact with us. So just a way to engage them even more.
Interesting. So you go on the podcast, you lead them back to a page which you create for that podcast that you've been on, you hope they sign up, then you try to get them on a webinar where you give more value. What happens at the end of the webinar? Like, what's the pitch? What's the next step?
The pitch at the end is that, you know, you've got enough information here to try this strategy and to use this strategy. If you want even faster results, you can buy a course. And with the course, you get all the videos that teach this in depth. You get all the forms we use, the workflows, the emails, sample welcome pages, and then also a list of over 400 podcasts that have guests on it. So really, you've got everything you need at that point to use this strategy. And for some people, you know, that's worth $497. For other people, they're like, eh, I'll figure it out myself. We've even had people that said, you know, that list of names of what podcasts to go on, that one's priceless, because there's services out there that will get you on podcasts. And getting on the podcast is not the tough part. And they'll do that for you. The part that's the system is what you need in order to get results out of it.
What do you mean by the system?
Well, if you just go on a podcast, and I was guilty of this myself when I first went on them, I'd go on a podcast, I'd talk, and I'd get no traffic from it. I'd see no business results. There was no flow for it. There was no sales funnel of giving a person a reason to come to your website, giving them more things on that. And we've got one client that is a franchisor, and you know, he was looking for people to sign up. And he'd been on about a dozen podcasts, and he was saying, well, you know, they don't work for me. And Matt Miller, School Spirit Vending, he went and used the system, and within 30 days, he was getting leads coming in of people that heard his story, that knew where his business was. He offered a free download on how to use, you know, vending as a secondary income. And with that, he was getting, you know, people that were calling not only from the United States, but overseas, and saying, hey, I would love to learn more about being a franchisee. And so within, I think his third podcast, he was already calling his franchise lawyer and saying, hey, what do we need to do to get a franchise agreement outside the United States?
What mistakes do you see in people's systems? When I guess you're probably working with some, you're coaching some of these guys. What are some of the main mistakes that you see when they try to get someone, I guess, into their buyer funnel and to get them to take that next step? What mistakes are you seeing?
I would say the first is who you're getting in your funnel. Vanity is such that, you know, if I got offered to go on a podcast that has 300 downloads a month, or one that has, you know, 50,000 downloads an episode, you know, I'm going to go on the one that has 50,000 every time. But I've been on that podcast, and the number of leads I got from that was a handful of leads, because it was such a diverse audience that my message only resonated with a small part of it. You know, it's like if you're talking to everybody, you're talking to no one. And I was on another podcast, and this host swears she gets 300 downloads per episode. And if that's the case, then 50% of her people that downloaded it became my leads, and a quarter of them became my customers. So I think from the very beginning, you've got to look at it and say, you're not trying to put more and more people through your funnel. You're trying to put the right people through your funnel. So just focusing on the people that you can delight and will be delighted by yours. The other thing with that too is that if you try pushing people through your funnel, they'll push back. You know, some people are early adopters and will do it right away. Other people, you know, need to be nurtured for a long time. So in my mind with that is, I always give them an option to purchase at any time. But I'm not going to play this game of that, you know, you've got to do it now or it disappears, you know, at midnight. I think that's just sort of manipulative. So I look at that as, you know, I'd rather have that relationship with somebody, say even somebody that may not be a customer. You know, they may not be able to afford $497 for a course, but they may tell people, hey, I was on this great webinar, and they could have great lifetime value for me, even if they don't buy something.
How do you figure out who your ideal client is? I don't think many businesses actually know, can't even picture what the right person would look like or sound like or buy.
Yeah, and people talk about this as being an avatar or ideal buyer persona. The easiest way to do it is, if you already have customers, is to picture those customers. And that's sort of the place you start from. So if you've got any experience with customers that you could interview them, or if you've got customer service people that you could interview and say, what do you think this person is like? And look at them not only from the demographics, and demographics is what the Census Bureau knows about you. So where does Tom live? What's his education level? What's his income? What's his job title? That's the demographics, but also looking at it from the psychographics. And that's really the point of how you think, how you make decisions. So things like, what's your aspiration? What's your fears? What do you already think about my industry? The preconceived notions that you have. Where do you get information from? Who influences you? All of those things. So you have this narrative together that says, this is the kind of customer I'm going after. And the thing is, Tom, is that you always are refining that, because we all know customers that that we just love working with, and they love working with us. And those are the people we need to get more of. And from the flip side there too, we've all got customers that, you know, that we'd never work with again because it wasn't good for them and it wasn't good for us. And they're not that they're bad customers, but they're bad customers for us. And with that, the burden goes on the business owner or the marketer. Because if you get crazy customers, it's because you marketed to crazy customers and weren't clear what you were doing at the beginning.
I think initially when someone starts a business, they just take everybody on because they got to pay the bills. So I think you cannot figure out who the right customer is until you see a whole variety of them. I just think it's impossible in the beginning to know right away, like, this is the only type of person I should be working with. So I agree with you on that. You should have some customers first. And if you don't know it yet and you're just starting the business, it's not anything wrong with you. It's just you just haven't seen enough to do that. You mentioned a podcast conference that you went to. Can you give some insights? What's going on in the world right now? What are people saying? Like, what are the newest tricks, methods that you've learned?
Yeah, I was at Podcast Movement down in Fort Worth, Texas, the beginning of August, and there was about 1,000 podcasters and other people in the industry there. And then recently I just spoke at the Inbound Conference in Boston the 1st of September, and there was 15,000 marketers there. And it was really interesting to do those back-to-back in a month. I'd say podcasting is the artwork, or the art form is really changing. You know, 10 years ago, a podcast was speaking into your microphone and your computer and then just uploading the raw files with it. The art form is really going up. So you've got people that are coming over from NPR and terrestrial radio that are trying to do some great quality shows on that. And I don't think it's even right anymore to call it a podcast. I think it's funny. I think some of the younger people that listen to podcasts have no idea what an iPod was, because, you know, to them, they're listening to it on their phone. And next year, in 2016, there's going to be some cars where you can download podcasts from your car without a device and listening to them as you drive off the new car lot. So really, it's not becoming podcasting as much as it is on-demand radio. And so that was Podcast Movement. And then going to Inbound, it was very interesting. There was a lot of buzz about podcasting. Some big companies have started podcasts, and they've seen the engagement it's had with their audience. You look at a company like HubSpot that just came out with the Growth Podcast. You look at Copyblogger that's come out with quite a few different podcasts. And they're just seeing this as, you know, blogs. Nobody reads blogs anymore. I mean, I can't think of how much time I spend each day reading a blog. I think maybe Seth Godin's is about the only one I read day in and day out. But you know, we don't read as much. But with podcasts, it's so easy to consume them that consumption is going up, and it's also you're not distracted with it. So I think we'll definitely see sort of a reemergence of podcasting, and I think we'll see a change in it also. I think it's moving from, say, the hobbyist to some, you know, serious marketers, and some serious brands are getting into it. And it was interesting. I thought I was going to be the only person in the podcast movement without a podcast. And I just went there to see friends that had podcasts and to get on more shows and talk about the strategy that I've been using. But there was a lot of people there from terrestrial radio that realized that people aren't listening to AM radio anymore or FM radio. They're listening to on-demand radio, and they were trying to figure out how they could get into that market.
I mean, I would like to meet the person that's just figured out that no one listens to AM radio. FM, I can understand, but AM, that's, I can't even, I don't know, the last time I had a device that can even pick that up.
Well, look at, what is it, Sirius XM? I think it's $200 a year or something to get that service. And as long as you've got an internet signal, you can listen to podcasts, you can listen to Pandora, you know, you can listen to, I think, Amazon streaming music. So why would I pay $200 for that satellite service? You know, they've got such a small market. Now, I guess if I'm in the middle of North Dakota and I don't have a cell signal, but I've got a satellite signal, that would be the only way it would make sense to me.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. The Midwest of the states, there are still some towns where people haven't changed. They still haven't moved on to the podcast. But most of the world, I think. Yeah, I like what you said, too. I like how you called it the radio on demand. I started using the word show much more than podcast because that's what it really is. But yeah, it's pretty much is radio. Radio on demand with new people finding their own voices and without as many commercials.
Exactly. And that's one of the things about being a guest that I love is that the format is so much different. Right. So people have asked, well, doesn't this same thing work on radio and television? And I'm like, exactly. That's we're trying to reproduce what people have been doing on radio and TV forever. So, you know, every time an actor has a new movie that comes out, you know, they're on the late night shows. They talk about their movie. They tell people, you know, the call to action, go to see it. But they're either paying dearly for that or they're paying a PR agency to get in there. You know, if I call the local radio station right now or the local TV station and said, you know, I want to talk to your audience about this. I know what I'd get a call back from. It'd be the sales department. And they'd say, you know, if you buy these ads, we'd be happy to get you on an interview. And because they're based on advertising. Podcasts are based on content. What you need more than anything is content and guests. So with that, it's been much, much easier to get on podcasts than it would be radio or television. And the other thing is podcasts are so niche. You know, why would I want to be, you know, in Chicago on WLS with millions of listeners on AM radio when only a small portion of those are my audience? You know, I'd rather speak to, like I said, 300 people of ideal customers than, you know, speak to millions of people that the vast majority of them aren't good customers for me.
Very cool. If people want to reach out to you and find you, where would they go? And maybe you can give a more direct place to actually talk to you instead of just a website?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at tmschwab.com. And then I love LinkedIn. I'm the only Tom Schwab from Kalamazoo. So definitely find me there. One of my favorite quotes is from Derek Sivers, who wrote Anything You Want. Derek started CD Baby, which was the precursor to iTunes. And he says, what's ordinary to you is amazing to me. And I think that's so true that I love talking with people, getting the different ideas and, you know, that cross-pollination. So please, if anybody's interested, reach out to me either on the website, on Twitter at TM Schwab, or on LinkedIn.
Very cool.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebel. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.